And welcome back to Banter, episode number 2. Thank you for also subscribing to our brand new channel at Nuggets on the Go. So today we have somebody new in the house. Let's welcome Grace.
Hello.
All right. We had fun on episode number 1. Do you have fun, George?
Oh, yes. Lots of fun.
I saw the footage. You were the most excited.
Yes.
You're very high about the episode.
Yes. Likewise. I hope to bring the same energy level to this table right here today.
All right. So today we're going to talk about some of the latest news that came out in the last 2 weeks, with particular focus on our own PRB research team Q4 report, as well as this pack of PDF that was being published by Business Times. Very interesting articles collated. So we're going to talk more about that as well. And Grace, why don't you give our audience a quick introduction about yourself?
Okay. Hi everyone, I'm Grace. I'm the listing manager at Property Lim Brothers, and I'm also the brand manager. So I see a bit of the forward-facing, client-facing stuff, and also back-end what we do. I'm excited to be here, a little bit nervous, and then I think just happy to be sharing some nuggets with everyone.
All right, welcome. Just to prepare you a little bit, later halfway when we are speaking, right, there will always be real nuggets. Yeah.
I know. <Okay. laughs>
Hopefully one day, when we keep doing this and doing this, right, hopefully McDonald's, please sponsor us, because we'll be doing free publicity for you. Please, McDonald's. I'm a big fan of McDonald's. All right. Okay. Yurong, talk a little bit about this. 24 February 2023, projects with 2023 ABSD deadline. And what's going to happen is that all these properties, they're going to hit their five-year mark. And of course, if you look at the next page, right, there's this very interesting portion right here that says that it'll be more meaningful for developers to just pay for the ABSD on the land price. And yep. That's for projects with lower take-up rates. Come, Yurong, what's your take on this?
I think this is nothing new. So back in terms of history, because of course 2011 was when additional buyer stamp duty was first implemented for developers. And I think from that point is basically, like, if we were to move the history back a little bit, what happens last time is developers can actually hold on to the units. Mm. Yeah, mm. So in a not-so-good market, they can always hold on to the units, they can rent it out and yep. sell at a later stage in time. So, of course, when government implemented this five-year additional buyer stamp duty for developers, so the plus point is they also want developers to bid the land in a more sensitive manner, such that the pricing is actually acceptable by the market. Right, so there are a few observations here. We can see that most out of these 27 projects, actually 23 of them belongs to the core central region. 5 from the rest of central and 4 from the outside central region. Of course, we look back at history. 2017, 2018, we have a similar article of like the whole stretch of properties that are reaching ABSD. And that time, there was speculation that mentioned that, okay, all these developers will start reducing prices in order to move the stock, and then they don't need to pay additional buyer stamp duty, and buyers can look out for good discount factors.
Right.
Okay. So if we look compared to history, what happens? There were like 3 categories of developers that I remember that did 3 different actions. Mm. Of course, point one, out of all the stocks that you see most of the time, the supply is much lower than what was published, because this is based on like back-legged kind of data.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
3 ways developers have handled previously beforehand. Number one, for developers that have really a lot of unsold units, some have decided to sell it to another company through like a fund basis.
Mm.
And so that was one way.
Right.
For I also like heard developers that like maybe have like 4 units left. So what happens is maybe like they, as an individual director,
yep.
they buy the unit. So the additional buyer stamp duty is on like an individual count basis.
Right.
So it'll be much lesser than the 30% over the entire land price.
Mm.
Yep. And of course, lastly, we also have developers that actually went ahead to pay additional buyer stamp duty such that there is actually no change in the pricing. I think which is a great move, because it gives
confidence
right, to future buyers that, okay, this developer, right, will not just reduce pricing.
Correct.
And so I have confidence that, okay, I can continue to buy from this developer.
Mm, yeah.
And it's also fair that in terms of reputation,
yes.
the first batch of buyers, or all the 80-90% of buyers that bought, they are confident that in future, if they were to buy future products from the same developer,
yes. mm.
developers will not cause a drastic drop in the valuation themselves.
Mm.
Yeah. So I think, of course, there were some developers that gave discounts in the past, and of course that on the ground context, we think that that kind of move technically spoils reputation in a sense,
yep.
right? So I think paying the ABSD themselves is better as a strategic branding move. George, I want to get your sensing. Do you think this will cause like an oversupply? But before that, I want to share with our audience this chart first. So this just came out fresh from the oven. Supply in the pipeline. So this is depicted by the sold units in the pipeline, the orange one versus the overall bar. And as of 2022 Q4, you can see that more than 75% has already been sold. And of course, that blue bar here will comprise of those projects that we see in the previous article that will hit the EBSD. So do you think there will be oversupply in the market?
I don't think there will be a huge oversupply in the market. And I think consistently, government are also looking at the number of GLS sites that you know are being released to the market. And I don't think there will be a huge oversupply, but rather I think coming into this season, as you all know, buyers will have a lot more options, especially when there are a lot of new launches coming up.
Mm. Yeah. Right. And yesterday I was giving a talk at one of the UOB branch it was a physical seminar. Of course, we're giving a talk to the local audience that signed up for the seminar with UOB. And then I shared this latest chart. So, and then I posted this question in the form of this quiz. And basically, there's going to be 38 projects that will TOP this year. So I posted a question to ask the audience on the ground, whether do they think, will these 38 projects, which comprise of about 19,000 units being flooded into the market this year, will it potentially cause an oversupply in the resale market? And what do you think, Grace? Do you think it will cause an oversupply? Like, what do you think will be the outcome and ripple effect? Do you think all these owners will sell their properties in the resale market?
Okay, so it depends whether the owners, they have bought into the units for own stay or, you know, they're looking at it as an investment project, right? So if it's a pure investment, they're looking to hold for the entire TOP period. And I mean, and for the entire BUC period. And then once it hits TOP, they are looking to sell. Then it could cause an increase in supply. But I do not think that all of these owners are purely that kind of investment types. There are actually many owners who have bought into these new launches project with the intention to stay or maybe rent out as a second property for investment, right?
Right.
So, of course, there are some groups that have bought into it that are maybe they are family types, family demographics, and they're renting now. This group will feel a pressure to sell their unit at TOP or even slightly before TOP, capitalize on the gains, and then move to their next property as a family. Yeah, so we do have clients like that. They are selling their properties once it's reaching TOP. You know, they hope that it's gained 200-300 PSF, and then they want to let go and release their names from the project, and then also buy a unit that's for own stay.
Right.
But for certain families, they have actually bought into the new launches to live in it themselves. Right. So when it comes to TOP, it is unlikely that they will let it go. Maybe they'll stay, they'll enjoy their new project for about three, four, five years. Yeah. Mm. And then once they've enjoyed, maybe they might even rent it out, decouple, release one name, or by then they could sell. So I don't think that it will cause a vast oversupply in the market. But definitely these TOP projects will make the new launches pricing seem a little bit more attractive because the TOP projects will ask for, slightly higher than they have bought.
Right, they won't sell cheap.
Yeah, they definitely won't want to sell at what they have bought at, right? So this will put a little bit of pressure on the new launch pricing, and then we'll have to see if there's a good enough disparity between the TOP and
In fact, your sensing is correct because when we saw this data, immediately we asked our PRB research team to dive deep into the sort of like the behavior of owners that has bought into TOP, that has bought into new launches over the past few years, and then what will be the behavior when it hits TOP. So these charts were fresh out of the oven. It just came out about 2 days ago, all right? And so basically these two charts, and if you look at them, we categorize them into the yellow box, which is the amount of percentage of units that was sold in the TOP year when they took keys. So let's say, if example, I took a key of my brand new launch that I bought maybe in 2015, and I took possession in 2018. What is the percentage of all these projects at TOP that year that is sold in the in this year? All right, in the TOP year. TOP year means immediately I take the key, I sell. And orange means I sell within the first 12 months of taking keys. I sold within first 2 years. And this basically was the result. So if you were to look at this, in the year 2020, 12.2% of people sold within 2 years. And then basically people who sold within the first year, they were a minority. It's about 5 to 6.5%. And if you were to take the totality, usually people that sells within the first 2 years, they are less than 20%. So which means that 8 out of 10 people, basically they hold on to the property and they don't sell. So your sensing is correct, because I think a lot of people that bought new launches, they actually have been waiting for 3 to 5 years, right? And then they finally they got a key, they want to enjoy the new property. Yep. They even if they want to sell, I think they will be demotivated if the price is not correct. Yeah. What do you think, Yurong?
Okay, I think there are like two parts. Maybe you can go back to the previous chart. Right? There are two things, right? So for example, you might notice that in 2018, 0.5% sell on the first year of TOP. And how come from 2019 to 2021, we have a higher percentage of like 2 to 3%?
Right.
And that is one of the reasons is because prior to 2018, it's because of seller stamp duty at that point of time was 4 years. Mm. Construction time was 3 years. Mm. So the first year of TOP, thereabouts, so they are still sort of like within their seller stamp duty period. So like you have lesser percent of people who are selling. And nowadays, we have gone through the 3 years. And if let's say construction time have already exceeded their seller stamp duty, once it reaches TOP, right, it presents a good opportunity for pure investor sellers to be able to sell something to a buyer as brand new and they still clear their seller stamp duty,
right?
To maximize their return. Second thing will also be that we want to understand that for 19,000 units that will be introduced next year, TOP, important thing is we want to know that these 19,000 units are not created equal, because some are bigger unit types, yep, some are smaller unit types. And through observation that we usually observe is the larger unit types, right, usually there will be lesser stock when it comes to TOP stage, because they are mainly presented to be owner-occupied. Some of them might have practiced what we call like, you know, like arbitrage, renting arbitrage, right? In the last few years, what it means is they might have sold their HDB, sold their condo. They have been renting.
Mm.
And then in anticipation to buy into a new launch, because I think like last few years, maybe there's this advice that you need to buy new launches to make money, right? So a lot
why
of people...
Why is that advice? Huh?
Sorry?
Why is that this advice?
Why is that this advice? Because I would say that generally, I would say new launches...
Is it like very biased kind of advice on the ground? Like
No, okay. Because partially, in the aftermath of total debt servicing ratio being introduced in 2013, definitely we saw that resale price performance has not performed as good as new launch pricing. And that is because the new launches, right, has the effect of like two things. Number one, developers build smaller, right? And then they are able to make the price range, right, of their units more palatable like to the audience, right? So what happens is they have the advantage of looking cheaper on a price quantum basis. So that's why they move. Second thing is because developers can still continue to increase pricing along the way. And so actually, if you are talking about purely 2014, all the way until 2020, right, generally you buy into a new launch, the price performance, you buy the correct one, the right pricing, it outperforms most of the resale options.
Which year again you're talking about?
From 2014 all the way until 2020. This is quite true that generally correct. New launches you're outperform right. resale properties.
You're right.
Because for resale properties, right, what happens is because prior to 2013, right, after the implementation of total debt servicing ratio, right, we generally people's affordability reduced by about 15 percentage points.
Mm.
Right. Mm. And so what happens is that there will be lesser demand. Speculators are out of the game because of seller stamp duty, it's harder to afford. The volume of transaction drop,
right?
Right, and hence the entire market, right, needs to reach a new price point that is lower. That's why you see 4 years of price decrease overall in the property price index.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So you're right in the sense that it's up to your point of 2020, because from 2020 till today, resale then started to move in terms of resale price index. Mm. So resale price index started to move very aggressively. Of course, new launches also started to move, and in fact, everything just fueled upwards, right? So leveraging on your point, I want to show you guys this brand new chart. Okay.
Fresh from the oven.
Okay. This is fresh from the oven. Okay. So when we look at our cooling measures chart, okay, this is our cooling measure chart, right? Okay. So of course, from the 2020 point onwards, everything start to shoot up. What Yurong just shared, basically from 2014 onwards until this point, there was like about a six years period that prices were quite stagnated, quite tepid. Basically, during this period, new launches tend to perform better. And then, of course, from the pandemic onwards, because of construction delay and everything like that spiraled into a new behavior trend, resale also started to move very, very aggressively. Okay, what I wanted to share with you guys is this. So last time, when we started real estate 16 years back, we went through the Lehman Brothers crisis. So during that period, although there was this sharp dip, but there was an observation on the ground. And of course, in terms of key statistics, if you notice this bar, there was this volume dip. So take note of this bar. Okay, so this is a behavior trend that is very common in Singapore. Notice that from here, 2013, when TDSR came out, there was a dip, right? But take a look at the volume. It dipped as well. Okay? Now, I want to share with you guys this latest one, fresh from the oven.
Every day, picking up new data from the research team.
Okay, it's fantastic. Okay, basically, we took property guru data to see in terms of... Because we want to see, we just got this gut feeling that market supply dips whenever there are negative news. So, of course, 2022, Black Swan year, this year, of course, continue to have a little bit more tepid response, right? Have a look at this. This is the Property Guru Property Listing Supply Index. Okay, so fantastic job from our PRB research team. We took the supply in terms of the amount of listings that is put into the market. Of course, why we take Property Guru is because they are the largest and most popular portal in Singapore. And most agents, if they're serious with their realty business, right, they will definitely have an account in Property Guru. So when they help their clients to list, they will list it on Property Guru. Okay. So when you see good years, 2020, everything was shooting up. There was a sharp rise in terms of the supply on the portals. Take note that ever since 2021, the supply starts to dip. But this dip was because everybody was buying up all the listings. But if you look at this, when we started 2022, if it dipped even further until now. And now our supply index is at an all-time low, right? Yeah. But price still maintained, it still went up. But take a look at the amount of people that wants to sell their property. Now, Josh.
Yes.
Maybe help our audience understand a little bit. When market is good, why do people want to sell? And then why is it that when market news seems to be a little bit more negative in terms of sentiment, why do home sellers pull out their listing from the market? Why do you think there's this phenomenon?
I think when the market is good, a lot of people will definitely say that, okay, it is the bull market now. I want to see how much I can capitalize. I want to see how much I can cash out. And then, of course, there are also a lot of other factors that they want to consider. For sure, is their age and then their income to see how much they can buy. Maybe what they are doing is also they are moving up to another asset class, maybe from HDB to condo, and then likewise from condo to a landed property. So I think naturally when the market is good and it's very buoyant, they will also want to take this opportunity to see how much they can cash out and then move into another asset class. Because when the market is good, that also means that their income should be very stable. And then this allows them to kind of, you know, leverage and to move into another asset class.
So would you say that this is a natural human behavior that when prices are going up, when there's good news in the market saying that, you know, quarter on quarter, prices are moving up.
Yes.
All the more, all this positive news shapes our behavior as a home seller that, okay, now market is good. I want to put my property in the market and then I want to sell and move bigger.
Yep.
So that's a natural human instinct, right?
Correct.
Grace, what do you think? Is this a natural human instinct?
Okay, I think partially, yes, natural human instinct, but it was also a very logical move. So it's like, okay, when you see the market, you hear positive news and then the natural instinct is that, okay, I also want to be part of this real estate boom. Right? Yeah. I also want to capitalize on the gains while prices are moving up and then I will put my listing on the market. But when the news is, you know, not so positive, maybe there are the sentiments of the market are not so good, why there could be a decrease in supply, right, yet the pricing still holds strong, is because sellers in Singapore especially are unlikely to compromise on price. Right, so let's say if I hear that the market is not doing well, that interest rates are high, buyers are more conservative, you know, listings are not moving as fast, maybe I might choose to take a pause and wait for I will not in any way compromise the price.
So I would sell my property for a lower price
just because the market sentiment is not that good. Yeah, that's why pricing still continues to hold strong while maybe some sellers are taking like a pause.
Right. So, you are right. I totally agree with you because I think the natural human instinct is that when I see good news, it means that my perception of the market is that there's a lot of buying power in the market. Try to sell above valuation, take advantage of the buyer's sentiment. Mm. And hopefully with this, I cash out and then I can buy something else. Or I buy bigger, I move bigger, right? However, this also sort of has a flip side perspective, right? Because if we were to look at this, okay, so this is a natural thing that always happens. And by the time next year, if let's say we flip over the papers, if Fed reduce interest rate, mortgage rate drop to, let's say, example, 2%, for example, then this graph will start to shoot out again. People will start to put their property in the market. They want to exit, move bigger. But then, if we were to look at this, this presents a very strange phenomenon because my perspective is that if you are planning to move bigger, you should take advantage when the market is actually on a more turbid or stagnant level. Yep. Because let's have a look at this. This scenario basically tells us that... where's my chart?
Yeah, like basically the buyer's mindset has to be different from like the seller's mindset.
But actually, there are like two parts of the coins, right? So like point one is that all this is the market situation created the behavior. So that's one, right? So like a lot of times people go by the herd mentality, right? But if we want to do... You want to have like the most optimized property decision, right? Then we have to see how we can take advantage and go contrarian to what the general crowd behavior is.
That's right. So I found the chart, right? So this one we just shared during our recent webinar. So you see, the contrarian mindset is that this particular client that came to us, he bought a new launch in 2008. And that new launch... That two beta, it was a huge two beta because it was before the 2013 era. He bought it at $1.8 million. He was 30 years old. 15 years later today, he's in a huge dilemma because he's 45 years old, but he's doing very well as a professional. He's doing well because he wanted to move to a different property. And then his question to us is that, Melvin, should I sell my property? But if I were to sell today, it's only worth $1.6 million. And the dilemma comes because all of us, on a human perspective, we don't want to go for gatherings, right? When we meet our poly or GC friend or uni friend, and then they say, hey, I heard you recently sold a property. Then you don't want to tell them, oh, I lost 200,000. And this is like, I bought 15 years ago, 1.8 million. Now, 15 years later, I sold 1.6. And I haven't even covered my buyer stamp duty and bank interest. And you tell your friends that you sold 1.6 million. And then, of course, my question to him is that, I ask him, why do you want to sell? So, I would say that the contrarian mindset has to be activated when you look from a perspective of which season are you in. So this season, he is in a season that his ability to move to a landed home. So basically, when we go back to just on that chart, right, is that if he were only to put out his property later on in 2025, and let's say the market recovered, by the time the landed home that he's aspiring to has also moved up, like, maybe in a higher quantum leap to $5 million, and then he would have lost more. He would have covered back his $200,000, but he would lose another $500,000 for this landed home. So I think it really depends on the season, and the contrarian mindset has to be activated based on your current season. What do you think, Rong?
Generally, my advice to my clients is to look at the bigger picture. In the sense that, don't just look at your individual holdings, like for example, this property that you're holding on to, right? Is it has it been profitable or unprofitable?
Right.
Because you want to look at the bigger picture, right? Is if today I look at a loss, right? Do I stand to put myself in a better position for gain down the road? This is what we call by switching portfolio, switching basically your funds. So think of it like, if today you have bank account A and they are paying you less than 0.5% interest, and you know that another bank is going to come up with 3% interest, so it does make sense for you to do some switching in that kind of element. And if you want to see things in a bigger picture, is for some of our clients who are more open to discuss, right, we can even talk about asset allocation among the different asset classes, right? So sometimes it might make sense for them to actually reduce their stock holding positioning, crypto positioning, depending on their life stage, their horizon in the market. to actually move some funds back to the real estate market because they are more in the wealth preservation kind of stage after they have made like, you know, like a huge pot of gold.
Right. Mm. Right. And of course, my advice to this particular client is that if he's in a retirement mode, then he should hold on because he should wait for the recovery because he's going to buy a something in the range of a smaller quantum, then he should hold for recovery. If he's buying something of a bigger quantum, then he should actually cut losses. Okay, let's move to this part here. George, what do you think of this? This is very interesting. In terms of the luxury market, have a look at the percentage. So I was reading this, and of course our own team has also came up with certain news, but I think Business Times did a great job on this particular article. Mm. So have a look at this. Buyers typically hail from China, US, Indonesia, Malaysia. Okay, but let's have a look at this. So if you notice, actually foreigners bought more homes in 2021 and 2022 than 2018 to 2020. Mm. So actually after COVID, foreigners bought more residential units in Singapore. And this trend and this phenomenon, why do you think was sprouted after 2020?
I think if you take a look at the breakdown, right, you also see that nowadays there's a lot more Chinese buyers that are coming to the market. Okay. Yeah, I think it's because of the governance of the Singapore real estate market. Especially after so many rounds of cooling measures, property price index still continue to go up. I think this also goes to show that a lot of investors, especially foreigners, right, they believe in the governance in Singapore. And actually, it just makes it more robust. I think that's one of the factors. The other factor is, I think, the strength of the currency. So even if, let's say, today, for example, Indonesian, they converted their currency from Indonesian rupiah to SGD, even if they buy at 1 million, they sell at 1 million, but as long as the currency exchange increases or strengthens, they will still be profiting. And I think more so is after, you know, the COVID period when the lockdown or the borders open, I think that's where all the cash starts to flow into Singapore.
Right. Something about these charts. Okay, so this chart is basically talking about 5 million to 10 million, of course 10 million to and above. Okay, it doesn't talk in totality of properties that's below 5 million. But of course, if you look at totality, the last 2 years, in terms of the number of percentage of properties bought by foreigners are at 3% in total for new and resale. I want to bring attention to this part. This is very interesting. Chinese buyers account for 33% of transactions in 2022 and US actually rose to 14%. So I think this group of investors and buyers from US, basically I think a lot of people forgot the part that there were a couple of countries that were exempted from ABS.
Correct.
So basically US citizens, when they buy properties in Singapore,
they're one of them.
Yeah, they will be exempted totally. Their first property is exactly like Singapore. So this is forming like a 14% group, which is very big, right? And a lot of people also think that, hey, you know, like, wow, 10 million, 15 million kind of properties. But actually, if you look at the number of transactions, it's very little. If you look at this part, Chinese buyers pick up 22 units costing 11 million at least, exceeding the 14 units bought by Singaporeans and 10 units by foreigners. Actually, the totality of units above 10 million is not a lot. Right. Yeah, you want to go something to say?
No, I think this is just to put into context, right? This is for non-landed properties.
Yes.
In the core central regions.
Yeah.
And we can see that, number one, as the percentage, as we can see that from all this graph, right, as the quantum of all these CCR properties prices increase, we have, the good thing is there is still like a healthy participation from local Singaporeans that are able to afford such luxury condominiums. But we also saw that the percentage reduces. And the rationale is because for Singaporeans, they actually have choices outside luxury condominiums at this kind of price range, right? They can be looking at landed properties. They can be looking at good class bungalow. And they have the option to own land.
And of course, why I think these charts were targeted at CCR is, of course, naturally, outside of CCR, in RCR, OCR, is There is technically not much properties above 10 million, above 5 million.
So, seldom.
Seldom, right? Which then brings our attention to this part. Mass market properties. So if you look at this, there's actually a very surprising data here. That let's have a look at OCR. Okay, so OCR technically holds about 50% of the overall private property non-landed transaction year-on-year basis. And if you look at this, buyers with HDB addresses, OCR, 2022, 45%. Because a lot of people think that people that buy OCR private properties are coming from HDB upgrading family nucleus. Mm. However, the contrary is quite true in the sense that actually surprisingly, buyers that already own private properties, 55% of them buy OCR properties. Why do you think there's this phenomenon, Grace?
Okay, so possibly there could be a few scenarios. The first one could be a upgrade from a smaller private property into a bigger private property within the OCR region, right? Another reason could possibly be that OCR properties are slightly bigger in size, which make them attractive to buyers who are buying, local buyers who are buying, right? So they're likely buying for their family, they're likely buying for own stay. So, my nose.
I think another thing is also because some of the...
What happened to your nose, by the way?
It's just very, like, stuffy. I've been, like, sick for a while, so...
Oh, where do you got this bug?
Maybe the office. Oh, I know where I got it. I got it from ice skating.
Oh my goodness. By the way, do we have an ice skating clip of Grace?
What?
She was like...
Insert here.
So we had a PRB sports day about 2 weeks ago. And it's supposed to be for 2 hours. So she came later. She left. She was left with 1 hour. The moment she hit the ice skating ring, she did a non-stop marathon for about 100 over rounds.
Okay, because it's sports day.
Without stopping.
But everyone was just talking. Everyone was like just hanging out.
And after that, she was sick.
Yeah, and then I just got a fever. And then
Cephas, how many rounds do you go?
One.
No, he got a lot.
Cephas, who is supposed to be younger than Grace, how many rounds do you go?
Was it add that sentence in?
Cephas is a rollerblading prodigy.
Hey, we should have one more camera that shines the producer's one. Next time. Then the producer can participate also. Yeah, next round, let's do it. Okay. Yeah. How many rounds do you go, Cephas?
For their thoughts also.
How many rounds do you go?
I got bored after like
30.
I lost count, right? I really lost count.
Right.
How long is one round?
The highlight for me was the dinner after that because we went to a restaurant that has microwave chicken. But you cannot say.
Good,
no,
food
please
stew.
Don't say. Okay. Can.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So you got.
Coming back. Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay, because of the COVID pandemic, right, a lot of the families were also looking for bigger spaces at home.
Right.
So I believe the OCR region, at the time also, the prices were more palatable, right, for bigger size units.
Right.
So likely, a lot of buyers who already stay in, or they're accustomed to the OCR,
right,
they have a smaller house, a smaller maybe 2 or 3 bedder. They may be looking to upgrade to bigger unit sizes in the OCR.
Mm.
Yeah. So I think that is why, you know, we think that traditionally, we'll think that a lot of the buyers of the OCR properties may be HDB upgraders. Yes, they do make up about half of it, but also there could be a swap of properties within the OCR.
Right. And actually this, I mean, because when a buyer goes to exercise the option outside the SMP, right, they need to show their IC. And then from there, their current address will be locked down. Mm. Of course, this has a mixed kind of source. Perhaps, let's say, I might be somebody that grew up with my parents and my parents are living in a private property, then my address will be from there. But I could be a first-time buyer buying an OCR property.
Yep.
And or I'm currently renting a condominium, then I could also come from there. So actually, this is not like a 100% foolproof kind of thingy. But of course, this is definitely very accurate because you come from a HDB address. And George, just now you're trying to say something, but before you say something, right, I want to show you this. OCR is the largest of the 3 market segments geographically. It's 4 out of 5 regions. And this is, of course, like one of the key reasons why OCR has the largest percentage in terms of transaction volume. Because if you look at the map, OCR covers like the gigantic part of Singapore, right? Yeah. So, Josh, you're trying to say something?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think some of them, what they are trying to do is they are also switching their portfolio. Mm. That means some of the older condos, maybe, you know, they are already approaching towards like the balances of 60 odd years, 70 years, and they want to take this opportunity to say, okay, I want to switch to a newer condo.
Right.
And then, you know, they kind of see this as a chance that, hey, right now the prices is still relatively good. COVID year, you kind of push out the price despite my property's age. Mm. And then they decided to, you know, like they just change another property.
Right. So I think the objective of this particular article is to talk about the fact that the OCR condos will continue to do well. It will continue to stay very buoyant. Yeah. And I want to show you guys this brand new chart again.
Really close the gap to CCR prices.
Yes, 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 yes. That is one thing that we need to talk about. Okay, let me show you this. This just came out fresh from the oven because it was requested by Yurong. So we're talking about this chart during one of our sharing sessions about 3 weeks ago, that there was a shift from the types of units being built by developers after 2013. So we further broke it down into freehold and 99 years. Okay, so 99 years properties are the dark blue ones. Freehold ones are the lighter color ones. So based on this, we just ask everybody over here, right? Mm. What properties do you think will be a rarity in terms of the type of properties that has a restricted supply and a higher demand in the next 5 to 10 years? Mm. Restricted supply, that means it's getting rare, higher demand. Mm. And meantime, while our panel is thinking, right, let's bring in the nuggets, come.
Is it here already?
Yes, then. Yeah, see the announcement?
Pretty sure it's here already.
Very wow. Awesome one, yeah. Okay, I need to like vlog this down because it's like very awesome. Have a look at this. Say hi, Fadila. Hi, Wen. Then we have Cephas. We have Yoda at the back.
Yoda?
He's wearing the coat that Cephas bought him, and then you've got Daniel, Gwen, bought nuggets for us. Of course, you have this very nice announcement panel here. And then George. You can still see your receding hairline.
Yeah, it's okay.
Can recommend some supplements for you.
I don't think it will work.
Huh? I also share with our audience that the way that we're going to conduct all our webinars, by the way, we've already kickstarted 2 webinars. We're going to do 23 this year. Webinars plus seminars. There will be 2 physical seminars, and thank you for supporting us. And we hope that really the webinars will bring a lot of value to you. Mm. But I share with our audience that the way that we're going to conduct webinars are different. Our style of webinars in PRB, there will be no products push at the end. So basically,
your mouth is blocking.
No, it will be unbiased. It will be knowledge and research based and analysis based. There's no product push. In the event, if we have any collaboration with developers, the title of the webinar will indicate that so that everybody that attends the webinar will know first. So we will not skew our webinars to a certain direction that at the end, actually that we're selling you a new launch. No. If let's say we do have any collaboration, we'll say that, okay, this is going to be talking about recession risk and stuff like that, but in collaboration with a developer on a certain project. So we'll make it upfront. But we'll still definitely do our best to be coming from a research and analysis angle, but predominantly most of our webinars are going to be no products placement kind of webinars. And of course, the next 2 one will be very interesting. This is going to be very interesting for HDB upgraders, family nucleus, happening on the 11th March. Please sign up over the sign up link. And of course, the next one's going to be fantastic if you're hunting for a landed property, because we're going to dissect whether it's this year good for buying something that is in a new build kind of status, A&A, or should you rebuild your own property. And our new webinar page is already live. So our new webinar page is basically here. Just go to propertyinvest.com/webinars. And of course, we have our brand new channel. We just announced that the last episode has ended on our main channel, and we are kickstarting on the new channel. Thank you for subscribing here. Please give us your support. And the reason is because we want to beef up on the amount of content right here on NOTG. All right, so we come to the end of today's NOTG banter. Very happy that you are with us on this banter episode number 2. So do help us to like, subscribe, as well as comment on our channel. If you have any comments and suggestions for us on things that you want to hear about the real estate market in Singapore, we're very happy to explore future contents in future episodes. And thank you for staying tuned with us. Do subscribe to our brand new channel, share with your friends as well. And if this content is valuable for you, give us a like button and we'll be very happy. happy with that. So with that, let's wrap up episode number 2 Benton series, where we have discussed so many things. What are the things we've discussed? We'll talk about...
Let's watch a replay just now.
So we'll talk about a couple of charts. We talk about the very surprising thing about the deadlines for ABSD. We also talk about whether the 38 projects that hits TOP will have an oversupply issue, and also some news article on luxury homes as well as Benz Market. So we hope that you enjoyed this episode with us, and we'll see you on the next one. Take care.